Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. Dr. Lamke, dopamine expert, said a few interesting things that tie into this work. She said, this is awful that they do these experiments, but hear this. They deprive rats of dopamine. When they put food to the rat's mouth, the rat will eat it. I don't know how much pleasure the rat gets out of it. But if they put that food away from the rat will not go for it and will just eventually die of starvation, just with the food right out of reach. That's how important dopamine is for survival. Now, this is so amazing. I want you guys to hear this because if you really hear it, I've experienced so much freedom beyond words energetically. And it's because of these things right here, is these insights that led back to repression inquiry. See, from a brain standpoint, which I love Dr. Lemke, it helps us understand all the chemicals behind everything. The dopamine conversation and the brain conversation is helpful. But when it comes to direct experience, it's not really. It's only a beginning. Because from a direct experience, we don't experience a brain. Like from awareness, if you close your eyes and just notice, where's your brain at? I mean, yeah, you might have an image of a brain, but that's not a brain. You might have a sensation there, but you're just feeling a sensation. The word brain isn't it. And if you really looked at it, you would just see, well, there's awareness here and some sensations, maybe thoughts. Can't find a brain. Doesn't mean that from a scientific view or an objective standpoint, as Ken Wilber says, that there's not a brain. It's just a perspective. From that perspective, there's a brain when they're studying it. But when I'm just sitting here like being and living, I don't ever experience the brain or a nervous system or cells or bones. And that's why you don't hear me talk about it. Because in direct experience, we experience sensation, thoughts, shapes, sounds, feelings, pain, narratives, stories, but no brains and no central nervous system. So we can only take what she's saying so far from the way that she talks about it in all science. You know, I'm a fan of science, but you do have to drop that. And then here's what's interesting. Yeah, from a brain standpoint, it's dopamine. The rat will starve to death. And that's the chemical side of things. But if you look at how we suffer, we don't suffer because of a dopamine deprivation like that. That's an experiment. And we don't even really suffer over starvation. We usually get that need, but there are some people that don't. But most people who do get those basic needs met suffer emotionally and psychologically. Now, this is where it gets really interesting and where we can end suffering. When you see that some of the survival mechanism is just like, it's been hijacked. I don't know if I can express this, but the same thing that makes the rat go for the cocaine obviously makes us go for cocaine, but it's also, you could get it from just like journaling, something pleasant, or drinking lemonade, or connecting with people. You can get a dopamine hit from a chemical standpoint from a lot of different activities. But with the drugs like cocaine, it's just flooding it. That's the reason it's so hard for you on the body, because then your system has to counterbalance that. And then there's this withdrawal. But here, if we drop all of that and we look from an interior awareness viewpoint, well, what we notice is something different. We notice when we go into the body that we have to stay safe and get love. And that's how it translates in the body with regard to our survival conditioning as it applies to suffering. Not necessarily as it applies to, going out, not going out in front of a car. Not that kind of survival. That's where we want to distinguish. Not going out in front of a car or eating food is, of course, part of survival. And if we don't eat or if we run out in front of a car, we could die. And the body knows that and it protects us from that. But the body also knows, almost like a rule, that it can't express a certain emotion. And this is such a calcified fear that it actually creates the sense of separation in our bodies. The buried emotions do. So the sense of separation, if you feel it in your body, is not separation. It's frozen, you could say, energy. It's emotion from childhood. Whether it's fear of anger or fear and anger, or fear, sadness, hurt, that's up to you to discover. But what you'll also discover in that energy of the buried emotions is conditioning, mind-body connections that are associated with survival. But this survival is connected with your ego structure, you could say. It's about suffering and being something false to survive and doing things that you don't necessarily want to do, but that you have to do, things you have to believe in order to stay safe from what you've buried. And that's the survival. It really feels like the same as physical survival. And, you know, suffering feels real. So people don't sit around going, well, I know that this story that I'm not good enough isn't true. Because if they could really say that, they wouldn't be suffering. They might try to say it, but when you believe it, you believe it. And it feels true. And it also feels true that that's me. And there's a fear of death there. It, for the system, it's not different than don't go out to the street in front of the car. Is don't let go of this. These identities, I'm unlovable or I am this or I am that. There's definitely conditioning in the body that says don't let go of that. That's not safe. That's like running out in front of the car. But why is it not safe? Is it really about physical death? The system is wired to be afraid of that. You know, going out in front of the car or dying someday. But that's not why we're suffering. It really isn't. It is, but it isn't. Yes, we're afraid of death, but the death down the road and the death of going out in front of the car, our systems pretty much take care of us for the most, in most cases in that way. I mean, you know, you're not going to run out in front of a car today, probably. But your system also takes care of you with regard to suffering. So you might believe you're not good enough today. Just like your system will make sure you don't go out in front of a car, it'll make sure you believe that. Because both keep you safe. And that's why there's such a force behind it and why ego identity keeps coming back. If you wonder why, it's because it's, I mean, you might know this intellectually, but here we discover it directly, is there's a mind, there are mind-body connections behind all of this that demand that we believe these things that make us suffer. And there's conditioning that says, I'm not letting go of that. And that's fear. But what is it that we're not letting go of? And what are we afraid of? Dying. It really isn't the death of some self later. If you would be authentic in your life, if you could feel and express whatever you've buried, that would be the death of the false self. Because the ego is produced by repression. That's Freud, confirmed by modern science. The ego is a... It's like a mandate coming from buried emotions. As long as you bury emotions, whenever you hold, as long as you hold back what's true, say it that way, as long as you hold back what's always been true for you when you didn't get your needs met when you were a kid, whether you buried anger or hurt or sadness, as long as you hold that back that felt true, you're forced to identify with what's false. That's just how it works. And so to go question those identities that we're forced to believe and then not get to the mechanism that creates them is a bypass. To sit and work with core limiting beliefs or identities that we unconsciously create for safety is to spin and toil because we created it. To sit here and deconstruct it or question it or allow it is okay, but it doesn't get us to the root, and it's the repression that keeps creating that. That's why you have so many different like identities and stories and shadows and defense mechanisms, coping strategies, because Repression creates many different forms of suffering. Freeze. We freeze around buried hurt in a conflict or flight. We're fleeing because we repress anger and we can't get angry. Or the fight response is because we can't be vulnerable. Repression is connected and producing suffering. It's connected to this, these forms of suffering. Now, here's where, so how does it play into the dopamine? Well, from a brain standpoint, yeah, it's dopamine, it's the brain and doing this and all that. But from direct experience, it's not. It's, the reason I need the cocaine, I can find it in my body. See, we don't just do cocaine because it's addictive. Yeah, there's the dopamine element to that. But when you have emotional repression, which is really the root of addiction, then we use that dopamine hit to stuff down a childhood buried emotion. Now we have an entire system that's surviving that way. And it feels like physical survival to use that drug or whatever it is. But it's not just physical survival, that rat aside. We are afraid to die. The death of the false self. The ego that got created in childhood, that's the one that's addicted or suffering. We don't want that to die. That's us. That's me. I don't want to die. But the death isn't down the road that we're really afraid of. It's the death now. It's actually being authentic now that is so threatening, which translates to, well, what's threatening is these buried emotions. And so these buried emotions are driving everything because that's the greatest threat. Emotionally, psychologically to us are the emotions that we had to store to survive childhood and parents. So if you can think of your suffering as like a mandate, like I have to suffer, then you won't fall prey as much to victim consciousness and you have a better chance at ending suffering. But if you believe that suffering is just happening, or if you start doing the non-dual thing like suffering is happening to no one, my question is, why is suffering still happening? It's of course okay, but see how we play into this thing where it's like, I don't want to look. I don't want to see. I don't want to know. I don't want to feel. And so I'll just sit here and be. But if we go down and feel what we've buried, then we know, we see, we feel. We are really being then because it's embodied. We're just so afraid of that. And I want to impress upon you that we are as afraid of that as we are really going out into the road. That is being our authentic self. So your resistance to awakening, and then especially your resistance to KI, which is the embodiment of that, is completely natural. There's nothing wrong with you. And I can say that now, of course, easy for me to say because I've been through the process, because I resisted it too. But now I know that my system was taking care of me. It didn't feel safe to feel and express anger. It had to produce chronic pain and other suffering because I couldn't feel and express anger. It was taking care of me. I was surviving by my system creating suffering like everybody else, including disease. That's the science, that emotional repression is a major contributing factor, even to things that look really physical, and we don't want to face it. Because to face this would be to face the very root of all of our suffering. We might say we do, but not when the root of suffering is driving us. That's not genuine, actually, because if you go into the body, you'll see that you don't want to be free. You only want to survive, which translates to, I need to suffer. I need to believe this because that keeps me safe and gets me love. But if you think you're going to sit on a meditation mat and witness the programs that tell you that you have to believe things to get your needs met, you'll be there for a long, long time and it'll never come up because it's buried with the buried emotions. And so now I want to talk about just a little bit how the needs are driving us when we get to the spiritual or the healing path, and they continue driving us until we process buried emotions. And there is no way around that, because to pretend like we're making an in-run around that is the bypass. So we can talk a talk, and we can talk about enlightenment or whatever neurodivergent remedy we have. But the truth is that the science is trying to tell us, with all of our inventions and developments in medications, the root of it is buried. No wonder the medications only get to the symptoms. No wonder recovery often doesn't work because we don't get to the buried emotions. No wonder there's a low success rate in many mental health, with many mental health issues. Not all. And even if we improve mental health issues through therapy, if we don't get to the buried emotions, that person could get chronic pain a year later or a disease from the same buried emotions that were missed in the therapy when therapy isn't focused on buried emotions. Very few people are. I notice some are, but it makes perfect sense to me. There's a movement towards trauma, but I see the bypass in that now because nobody wants to deal with that, the buried emotions, and many people don't know how to access that. So I just watch people spin and toil. And look, if you found a way to end your suffering, turn me off, because you don't need to listen to this. But if you're still suffering, keep listening, because I watch people spin and toil with all kinds of modalities that don't get to buried emotions. Then they turn around to me and they say, but why am I still suffering? And I say, because that's what you want. But nobody has showed it to you yet. If you just, you're mindful or you do this or that process, you'll hide it from yourself. And that's what you've done. Because when you don't process buried emotions, you couldn't even know why the suffering isn't ending. Because you don't know why it comes up. How could you end suffering if you don't know the mechanism right here in the moment that brings up your suffering? That's the repression. I think it's fascinating that humans skip over the operating system in their bodies that drives everything, that if they made conscious would provide such deep insight beyond any knowledge that you could attain by doing it the way that humans have done it, which is let's avoid the body and let's go study ourselves from the mind. There's a problem with that, of course, with science, but really almost everybody's doing it, even if you're not a scientist. Scientists can help us because even though they got out of their bodies to go study us, their science, when they followed the data, brought them back to our bodies. So it's so interesting that science is really an inquiry that leads to the root of suffering, just like spiritual inquiry, if you're skillful, just like if you're skillful as a scientist and you follow the data. Because when you drop all the knowledge, thank you, Dr. Lemke, for the dopamine knowledge, but I have to drop it and everything else. And now look and see, how is this survival thing happening for me? And for that, I really can't rely on the dopamine. Here's where the dopamine thing from Lemke is helpful, though. And I'm going to tell you how we can go into direct experience or how it works, so to speak, in a moment. But before we get there, the reason I brought her up is, you know, she talks about the rat who, you know, you deprive them of dopamine, put the food so many feet away, they're going to die. They have no motivation to go get that food. And then she talks about our ancestors who worked really, really, really hard and long to get just a little bit of a reward. So we spend all day traveling or fighting or working through the bushes, and then we finally get to where there's a little bit of food and we eat it, and that little reward makes all that hard work kind of feel like it's a payoff. Now, how does that apply to suffering? If you drop those scenarios just long enough to become skillful with regard to your own consciousness with KI, here's what you'll find. We're doing the same thing everywhere. If you forget dopamine for a moment, we have conditioning in our body that's actually responsible for our emotional and psychological suffering that says, well, basically, I have to hold this emotion back. I'm afraid of feeling and expressing it. And I'm afraid of getting rejected if I do. And that is my survival. That's how I survive as a separate self. That's part of the survival conditioning. The conditioning doesn't really know the difference between food and suffering. Or it just needs it because it's how we stay safe. We're surviving. It knows not to go out in front of the car. You'll get hit. Don't do that. That's not safe. eat food, you could die. That's not safe. Eat. If you start taking cocaine, it thinks you need that for survival, but also a whole bunch of other things that amount to your suffering are all for survival. How do we determine that? Not through the mind. We came right through the body in KI into the actual conditioning. And what we found through utility inquiry is, if I sit here and believe I'm unlovable, that's how I survive as a separate self to the conditioning. Done deal. See, because as long as I can survive, that's all I need. That's the only thing going on here, is survival of the separate self until we see through that and we don't suffer in that way. But like everything is for that. Utility inquiry showed it to us. It showed us that no matter what we say about why we believe something, it isn't true. The real reason is because we have to believe it, because it's on the level of survival. Like, it's not safe not to believe that. Imagine somebody who believed in Jesus Christ and they holding on to that for dear life, and they thought that if I don't have this relationship with Jesus, I'm going to hell. Do you think they're going to give that up easily? No. That is the reason that people suffer, is because the belief systems are considered a matter of survival to the unconscious. And so is the addiction, the depression, the chronic pain. It's all being created to stay safe from the buried emotions. The conditioning of trauma is creating a lot of it. There may be some physical diseases that just have as less impact from the trauma, but what I just did is a blog that I just pointed this out for people to really consider. Our awareness, the non-dual awareness, is inseparable from our genetics, from the environment, and, well, from our own cultures. It's all consciousness. We divide it up and we say these are genes over here and this is dopamine, but you cannot separate out dopamine from the body, the nervous system, the emotions, the childhood trauma, the intergenerational trauma, the environment, and the genes that get turned on in the environment because an individual can't feel and express something, so they have to identify with what's false. I mean, I could go on and on. There's no separation. You know, this is a non-dual teaching. But what I'm saying is, who cares about that? If there's no, if you can't apply it in a way that ends suffering, who cares about the non-dual part? So here's the part that matters. When you actually do KI, you embody the non-dual. That's the key. And then you see where all that suffering came from, because you see that your system was creating it, and you see for what purpose, for what benefit, which was, in an intellectual sense, survival, but that's the adult mind. What it really is something more like this. I'm afraid. Just tucked down into the body around certain emotions and getting hurt or rejected. And then along with that, here comes a false self to the surface. And like, that's something that we're safe with, see? So if I believe I'm not good enough, that's not who I am. But I might have a lot of reasons for thinking for why I believe that. And not a single one of them are true until I get to the true reason. Which, even if I say it's because I believe in separation, is that really the reason? If I say I'm believing it for survival, yeah, you're getting close. That's heady. When you get into your body, it's, no, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to feel and express this anger. It's just safer to believe I'm not good enough than to walk into that room and get angry at my loved ones. It's safer to sit here and be depressed or to have pain and sit in my room and not want to be around people than it is to go and feel and express the hurt from childhood to people. But I wouldn't know that because it's buried. All I would know is the disease and its symptoms, and that keeps me safe. It's so convincing. I had spinal stenosis. I had two of the best surgeons, my great doctor, telling me, yeah, it's physical. You're going to have it your whole life. It was gone with doing repression inquiry. Sticking with that every day, it left. Because, see, that's the greatest wisdom is within us. I went to my doctor and they just acknowledged that it was false. At best, it's still knowledge. Even if it was insightful, it's still secondhand knowledge, because I had to go into my body and find what was driving my suffering. And there was nothing in my body that said, spinal stenosis. Nothing. Because the child in me didn't know what that was. the child knew that I have to stay home from school for 3 months and I got to store this rage, because now I understand as an adult who's done repression inquiry that I have that. Like, don't fucking mess with me. Energy. I definitely have that. I didn't have that then. And I stored all that. And now I know I was just staying home from school, storing that and the humiliation and just trying to distract myself. And then that calcified eventually into chronic pain and addiction. Just like the science says. But it's so much more human when you can see it in your life. And then you can do this work, and it's like having a life review, the embodiment process, because you can see, well, no, this is just what I had to do. And also, here's how it impacted me. I created my own suffering. Here's how it impacted others. I hurt them. The nicest people here, the nicest people that come here, finally find out how they've hurt people after years of thinking that they didn't, because they had buried anger. We have buried anger. It's all covert. We disconnect. We shadow. We go silent and punish. We do a lot of things, anything other than authenticity, when we're anger repressors. And that's survival. We do that to stay safe and get love. So, you know, nobody gets to be nice and get a pass out of freedom. That's what we do. It's like, as long as you're a good person, you know, you don't have to really do your stuff. Because if you did your work, well, then you might not be a good person anymore. And we kind of like you around here, being a good person that just stays quiet and never says anything. We're surviving quite well with you around, you know, hiding your anger. Could you keep that anger buried there? See, because it's culturally and socially rewarded to suffer if you're nice and kind and sweet and loving and empathetic and compassionate. Because if you're that, you're safe for everybody else for the most part, but not everybody likes that. And then you can suffer silently. That's what a lot of anger repressors do. We disconnect from people, and then we have our issues, and many of us come to spirituality because we don't really know what's going on, and we come here and we find a sort of safe haven in the language, but we don't know why. And we're also scared of the language, but we don't know why fully, because you can't know why until you get to buried emotions. But here's what's scaring us: our own authenticity, that it was never, ever safe to experience when we were kids. We just didn't get a chance to be ourselves. It's that simple. So what I'm saying is, I'm saying a few things. Number one, all the brain science, Dr. Lemke, I'm a fan. Donald Hoffman, I'm a fan. A lot of the different science, the areas, I'm a fan. It helps us. But in the end, it's the direct experience where we get the greatest wisdom. But we can't cut out the science and just go for the wisdom, because we're bearing emotions. And sometimes we need the science to remind us of that. Or at least that was my experience. Or we need someone to. Because let me tell you what it's like, and I think this is really the work that we have cut out for us, me and Dan. When we're mentoring people, this is the second thing I want to tell you, is about the repression barrier. If you want some takeaways, here are the takeaways. Here's number two. The repression barrier is insidious. If you imagine an iceberg, everything at the tip is what you're experiencing in your waking life. Everything under the water are the core fears associated with the buried emotions for KI purposes. Now, but that's really how it is. I mean, that's what's buried. Imagine going around. It's just one way of illustrating. It's not how it is. The iceberg is not literally what we are. But it points to a main duality that we just miss in almost everything we do, because to get to this buried emotion would be so threatening, the system says, but yet so freeing, unbelievably freeing. But that's why the system is afraid of it, because the system has warded off this your whole life. Like, I can't express that. I can't be myself with all the colors of me. And so there's the resistance, which again is just survival. So when you resist this work, you're not doing anything wrong. Just surviving. You don't want to feel the buried emotions. Just being human. When you have sabotage, you're not doing anything other than, if you sit there and believe you're broken, you're not broken. But I don't say that to gaslight you. Would never want to do that, because pain is pain. But you're broken is not what's really happening. You believe that to stay safe. That's for survival. If you were to deconstruct it all the way down to the repression level, you'd see that. So there's not a thing that we believe that isn't believed for to survive, to stay safe and get love. Now, those are childhood needs that are hooked into survival by the time we're adults, because we had to hold the anger back or the hurt when our needs weren't met when we were kids to survive that environment. So now that we've had to hold emotions back in these unmet needs, this is a matter of survival as adults. So when we're in relationship, when we're suffering, we're trying to get our needs met. We're trying to survive again. So it'd be like, I'm unlovable here. And what that does is those beliefs protect us. They keep us safe. So if you and I are in a little trigger and you say something and I say something back and I go into the other room and I just feel bad about myself. Now, that protects me, because under that would be whatever I buried. I can't feel it because it's buried. So if I'm off in my room and I'm feeling like a contraction and some fear or some emotion, none of that is the emotion that's buried. All of that is being produced by it. Again, go read the science, because your mind won't want to believe it unless you've done some work like this. But so even processing that trigger in my room, if I sit there and just witness or inquire into the belief that I'm, you know, there's something wrong with me or whatever that is, I could feel relief. And see, if I get relief, then I'm safe. That need for safety is met by processing just the surface at the tip of the iceberg. And that's insidious, because now I still have the buried whatever it is, and I come back into you, but now I'm forced to be false again. And so what's going to happen? More suffering. Because whenever I hold back what's true, forced to identify with what's false, to survive and to get needs met. Because when I come back to you, then I can also get your love and approval by not being myself, the conditioning says. And here's another little thing where we get tripped up before I go. The whole part of getting, remember, survival is about getting our needs met. It has the force and momentum of that. When you're in relationship and you believe something, it has the force and momentum of survival, because the needs that are connected to the buried emotions are forcefully, being demanded. It's almost like, I need you to love me. And then you show up in some way that doesn't meet that need. But am I going to say, hey, I needed your love and you didn't give it, and I can't express this buried emotion, so let me express this and be free? No. We're not even usually aware that our own needs and our need to survive and stay safe is behind our suffering and a trigger. To know that much would be the beginning of the end of that suffering. We would still have to process the buried emotion. But if we really knew that, well, I wouldn't go off into my room and just feel bad about myself or process that, because I would know, well, that's just me surviving and therefore unconsciously arguing in favor of more suffering, which just means I need to survive. That's all that means. I need to still be this ego. But it's just so unconscious, because the repression is driving it. So we don't have these internal processes usually to be aware of at all. We're aware of, like, I'm not good enough, and other thoughts that keep us safe from knowing about all this. I mean, all kinds of things. Look, I'll leave you with this. I was in a relationship, as you know, with someone with BPD who could get really angry when I was in anger repression. And I just tried to survive the hell out of that. And I just encountered suffering for the first time in many years as a teacher by being in a relationship like that. Chronic pain. I kept storing my anger there, and it kept getting worse in that relationship. But I was surviving, and I saw that. And my system resisted processing the buried anger because I was afraid of dying. Not later in some car accident. That's safe in inquiry and in life. I mean, no, not if it's happening now, but the thought of dying later is not the scary thing. No, what was scaring me was like actually being myself with him and dying, like just dying. But that's all what I always wanted as a non-dual teacher. It's just the embodiment of it. I'm telling you, you'll fight it tooth and nail, and the body is keeping the score. So the body keeps creating suffering as you're fighting the process that ends the suffering. Why? To survive. Oh, and by the way, the mind that comes up, I just did a video on YouTube that says this or that spiritual thing is almost always to protect from the buried emotions. I mean, how do I know? Because I landed in so many different places, even non-dual pointers or non-dual wisdom, all that, just any place that one can just hook into. If it's Jesus Christ, that's fine. Or a fan of Donald Trump, and that's all I think about, that's fine. Or awareness. It doesn't matter. And people say, well, how do you hook into awareness like you would a story? It's not for you to know. It's unconscious. That's what I'm saying. You're the last to know because the embodiment process will keep you from seeing this. So what you're doing is just speaking from it. Speaking from a mind that doesn't know it's there. And that was really been developed to make sure that you don't find out so you can keep suffering. Why? Because it's safe. The link in the description, as always, is just either come talk to me if you're interested in one-on-one. If that doesn't feel safe for survival purposes, even if you don't know it, consider that people are going to the KI Jumpstart group. They're just filling up every month because people are really interested in this work. But only certain people are coming to me. That's filling up too. I'm not even going to be able to take that many intensive clients within a couple of months. So everything is filling up. I'm just telling people, hey, if you want a spot in the Jumpstart, February 1st is the next start, and it's probably going to fill up too. And then this next few months, I'm going to figure something out because I love working with people one-on-one. It's my favorite thing. So if you can step forth and speak to me, if you're interested, it's a free talk to see if the one-on-one is going to be a fit. But there's some interesting things happening this year. I'll tell you this, because we don't want this modality to be something that like only Scott Killaby knows and does with people, or only Dan knows and he does. So I'll do my really quick training talk, 1 minute. If you're somebody who helps people, I would wager a bet that unless you've done emotional repression work specifically, you're still driven by buried emotions and unmet needs, and that that's making you suffer even when you're helping people, not during the time you're helping, but that if you look in your life, there's suffering. And if you can be really honest, those things are totally connected. They don't look like it necessarily, because we often will go help people to stay safe from the buried emotions and to distract ourselves from the suffering and from the repression. That's why a lot of us do it. That's what I was doing. Well, we've completely revamped our training program because we think that there are people out here who really do want to not be codependent when they help people. Like they really don't want to. But you have to find out if you have buried emotions, because the science is saying that codependency is most often buried anger. So if you don't check into the body, when you go help people, you're going to hurt yourself first. And it's mostly for you. Secondarily, you're going to hurt them because you'll misguide them away from the repression and they're going to have to deal with more suffering. But you're going to hurt yourself. There's a lot of helpers who get sick and are just suffering. Sometimes they get sick with the disease, though, because many of them are driven by repression. I want to invite people into the mentorship program or to my intensive so you can eventually come into the training program and go be a really good helper who loves but who helps authentically. The definition of authentic compassion is a desire to alleviate suffering in others, but not from unmet needs and buried emotions. That's not part of the definition. They actually say it that like you don't do it for personal gain, like getting needs met. That's really the currency. Even though people charge for things, if you look, there's a lot of just needs getting met. And you can't really see it at the surface. It just looks like people helping people. But where anybody is still suffering, I'll look at you and I'll say, you have repression. Before you go help people, come train with us and let us show you how to end your suffering first. Then you're just going to be amazing when you help people. Thank you.